Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Our list of the kinds of polystrate fossils, Fred, this is part three. I think we'll conclude today.
Well, that sounds great, Bob. But first, there's a movie coming out nationwide.
Oh, yeah.
February 18th.
Yes. Patterns of Evidence by our friend Tim Mahoney.
Yeah, the third one in the series.
Oh, on the Exodus.
Yep.
And what a fabulous series. In fact, Tim Mahoney, I believe, has created the greatest advance for apologetics in the defense of the scriptures of this century so far.
Oh, that's quite the praise. And, you know, he's done it. His films are great. They're so well produced.
Yeah, they're works of art. And he lets the skeptic experts, the Egyptologists, make their case against the Bible.
Yeah, that's what's amazing. He's using people who are hostile to the Bible, basically.
Yes, let them make their case.
Yep.
And then look at the evidence, and not only the evidence, but the patterns of evidence, which is so powerful. So you said it's February 18th?
Yep.
7 p.m. nationwide. It's a Fathom event here in the Denver area. I know it's at Colorado Mills, Westminster Promenade, the Denver Pavilions, which is right on the 16th Street Mall, downtown Denver, right by Maggiano's.
Yeah.
Little Italy.
Plenty of places to go see it.
And then go eat dinner.
Yeah.
In fact,
and that's
Fred,
what you're going to do, right?
Well, how about this? For anyone in the audience who wants to see Patterns of Evidence at Colorado Mills, I'll make a commitment, Lord willing. I mean, maybe the Lord will return before then. But I'll make a commitment to be there with friends, family, church members. And after the film, as we usually do for creation films and these Exodus apologetics films, we walk to the Yard House and pull a few tables together. It could be a little loud in there, but have some drinks, appetizers, and talk about what we just learned.
Yeah, and that would be so much fun, Bob.
Yeah.
But you know, speaking of patterns, what about the kinds of polystrates? We're on part three of our series.
That's right.
And it's in itself, these polystrate fossils, these different kinds, not just trees, but different other kinds.
Yes.
Like you talked about leaves and all these other kinds.
Yeah.
They themselves form a pattern of evidence.
Wow, what a great point, because a pattern of evidence is stronger than, say, just an argument or just a piece of evidence or just even multiple pieces of evidence. When you have patterns of evidence, so if there was a global flood and the geologic column is a result of the rapid laying down of sediments from the global flood, then you would expect to find millions of fossils that span multiple strata, multiple rock layers. And that's exactly what we find. Like you said, Fred, it's not only trees.
Yeah, that's right. And we find them around the globe. So how about, for example, these 40 whales?
Yeah.
It's a pod, right? A pod of whales.
A pod of whales?
40 of them. So they're bare.
That's the collective. Now,
that's the collective for whales.
So it's not a school of whales like for fish.
Yeah.
It's a
pod of whales.
Okay.
And they're...
I believe you.
Yeah.
Like a pile of homosexuals? Is that what you're saying?
No. Okay. These 40
back
whales.
To the text.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The 40 whales, they're buried in the desert in Chile.
Okay. So now, Fred, obviously this can't be true, right? 40 whales way up above sea level. In the desert, buried in strata. Now, Dr. Walt Brown has made a prediction in his theory, the hydroplate theory, that at the base of the world's major mountain ranges, there are buried, like along the Rocky Mountains, along the Alps, the Himalayas, there are buried hundreds, if not thousands, of whales fossilized.
Yeah.
So Walt made this prediction years ago. This is a small confirmation of part of that prediction. And so 40 whales buried in the desert in Chile, the Smithsonian looking at this, one of their evolutionists, they're all evolutionists there,
yep.
Dr. Nick Pineson, he says, what's really interesting is that this didn't happen just once. It happened four times.
Four times.
Now, four times. Now, nope. Fred, how in the world? Remember the jellyfish fossils in six layers,
yeah.
A school of jellyfish? And they say, well, golly, it happened six times in this one quarry in central Wisconsin. Six times jellyfish came back right here in a whole school of them. Could I use school there? A whole school of them were fossilized.
Yep. They kept having family reunions every thousands of years.
Yeah, every 100,000 years. Over a million year period of strata, there you find these.
Great granddaddy was buried there. I'm going to go let myself be buried there now.
Right.
It's our turn.
Yeah. So obviously, you had one school of jellyfish. They got caught up in this sedimentation event that happened rapidly, forming six layers. And those six layers were not laid down, as the geologists say, there over a million-year period. They were all laid down rapidly. Now you get to the whales in Chile, and what's going on? Why does the Smithsonian's Dr. Pineson say it happened four times? Why? I want to know why.
Okay. He said because the fossil site has at least four layers.
Four strata.
Yep,
four strata. Four rock strata that these whales are buried in.
Yep. Strata that would have been laid down, you know, for thousands of years.
So could I give you the official Real Science Radio response to that?
Sure.
Come on, Fred, you're making this up. Four times. It happened four times.
And, we're talking whales.
This one little section of the desert in Chile.
40 whales. 40 fossilized whales.
Come on.
And four layers of strata.
That's all right. So I gave my response.
I have to add mine.
What's yours? it's absurd.
It really is.
Yeah. So these Tide pods of whales, or, well, you know, the tide and the whales.
Tide. Okay.
Sorry. I apologize. It happened once. There was a pod of whales, 40 of them. They were killed during the global flood. And these four layers that they happened to be buried in were all part of one event.
Yeah, one.
The event that
one
killed
catastrophic
the whales.
Event.
That buried
it wasn't
the whales.
Something that happened four different times.
No.
Spread out over who knows how many thousands of years.
Okay. So then, Fred, that brings us to polystrate trees. Even though we began this series saying the folks who've heard about polystrate fossils, pretty much the only one they hear about are polystrate trees or forests. So let's spend some time now and talk about the most famous ones. We said we're at Joggins in Nova Scotia, Canada, but then next has got to be in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
The petrified polystrate forest there.
Yeah, and then there's a polystrate fossil forest in France.
That's right, in France. And there's so many polystrate trees that have become famous, and this is over a period of centuries that these have been identified now, at least a couple centuries. So, Fred, let's begin with Yellowstone. Years ago, back in the 90s, Cheryl and I went to dinner at the home of a park ranger in Hawaii, Mark Tanaka Sanders. He came on the show.
It was awesome. He came into the studio and did a show on the hotspots.
Hawaiian hotspots, where you and I debunked that geologic story, and we quoted many of the world's leading volcanologists, including from the University of Hawaii, who say the whole hotspot story is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the magma plumes through the mantle, that whole story is wrong.
And I bet if people want to find out about it, they could go to rsr.org/hot-spots.
Yes.
Am I right?
You're right.
See,
That'll do it.
Yeah, it'll be good to learn how.
Yeah.
You're pretty good at always coming up with the most common sense way to find that stuff.
The easiest way to go directly to it without even searching.
Yeah.
So Mark Tanaka Sanders was the chief park ranger for the National Park Service for Haleakala, the volcano on Maui. And if anyone ever gets to go to Hawaii, highly recommend, go to the peak. It's really a stunning experience. It's, you know, from the summit right down to the sea. It's all right there, and it's fabulous. And there's a church midway up, Fred, for years, the pastor is a friend of Bob and Yart Live.
Oh, wow. For years. That's really cool.
Yeah. The Highlands Community Church, I think it's called. The discussion over dinner with Mark and his wife and Cheryl and I were these signs at Yellowstone that misrepresented these upright trees, these petrified trees, claiming that they had stood there for millions of years. And then with erosion and all, you could see successive layers, 20,000 years worth of forest coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, and dozens of different forests, different strata. And so that whole story is false. We learned for sure how these were formed when Mount St. Helens blew.
Yeah.
And so Mark said he would work with his peer at Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah, the chief ranger there.
Yes, to try to get them to remove the exhibit.
Yeah, it's because they found these trees are missing something pretty important that kind of gives an idea that they didn't grow there.
Yeah, they don't have root systems.
They don't have root systems.
Right, exactly. Their roots are broken off abruptly at the base of the trunks of these trees.
Yeah, and then
yet they're standing vertically in all these different strata, like 27, 30 strata worth.
Yeah, and we got to see it real time, a lab on Earth called Mount St. Helens.
And a geologist, Dr. Steve Austin, made a fabulous video. We showed it on TV in 80 cities back when BEL was syndicated nationwide. And what a great night that was.
Yeah, that was one of the first shows I saw on your TV program.
Oh, yeah. So exciting. So it turns out that when trees are destroyed in a catastrophe and there's a lot of water, they float, they're transported, then they get waterlogged, and they sink upright vertically.
Yep.
They're upright floaters. And then as they sink to the bottom of that standing water, the sediments falling out of the lake, out of the water, are making layers at the bottom of the lake.
So they'll land at the top layer at the bottom of the lake, but then more layers are going to form above it.
Yes. And so then other layers are formed. And as the layers are being deposited, falling out of solution, then more trees are sinking at different rates. And you get what you have at Yellowstone exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. And Steve Austin saw this happening. I mean, again, it was real time.
Yes.
You go down there and you see the different times that trees are waterlogged and they sink to the lake and they embed themselves down there and they're upright.
So our page, rsr.org/polystrates or polystrate-fossil, our page, we have a quote from a geology professor who wrote the book Roadside Geology of the Yellowstone Country. And he says this: when I visited the Mount St. Helens area shortly after the eruption, it was just like Yellowstone. Hmm. And he has an exclamation mark. Both the mud flows and the appearance of the trees is identical. So, Fred, on our website, many years ago, we put a note. And we said, if anyone has photos of that original Yellowstone exhibit, please send them in to RSR.
And that was on the site for 10 years, right?
10 years that notice was there. And finally, from California, Malibu.
Yeah, we were patiently waited.
Yep. We get an email from David Coppedge.
David Coppedge,
who's
famous
that? In his own right. He worked for JPL, NASA,
yep, been
the Cassini,
on RSR several times.
The ground systems administrator for that Saturn mission. What a fabulous guy.
Oh, yeah. He recently spoke at RMCF, and you can watch his video online
here
for
in
that
Denver.
Presentation at youngearth.org.
Oh, in a week from today, Dr. Jason Lyle will be speaking at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship.
Yep. You can find out. Go to youngearth.org for more details.
Yes. So David Coppedge says, well, Bob, in 1983, my family, I was young, we went to Yellowstone. I took photos of that trip, and then I just went again in 2015, and I could confirm RSR's report that there are no such signs at Specimen Ridge like there were in 1983.
Yeah, so cool.
And so on our Polystrate page, we are displaying all of David Coppedge's photographs of the exhibit, and they're fabulous. They have a sketch of these scores of strata on this one hillside in Yellowstone where they say over 20,000 years, dozens of different fossils started growing and then were wiped out, growing, wiped out, growing, wiped out, growing, wiped out. And each time a handful of their trees became petrified, fossilized, and were left standing upright. And it turns out the whole story is not true. These trees have no root systems, so they removed these exhibits after Mark Tanaka Sanders began corresponding with his peer, the chief ranger at Yellowstone. Shortly after that, they took down these exhibits.
That is so cool. I mean, that doesn't happen very often.
No. Now, we did a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, directly to the National Park Service, RSR did, to get photos of these exhibits. It was impossible.
Yeah.
They sent us the most irrelevant photos you could imagine. But thankfully, we got the photos. And this exhibit is no longer there because what they were claiming that these trees, here I'll quote, these stumps still stand upright in the same sites where they grew millions of years ago.
Where they grew. You know, if you're going to make that statement, you might want to confirm that they grew there by maybe checking to see if the roots are there.
Yes, right.
But they didn't, so.
Or maybe they did and they knew and they said it anyway.
That's true. That's a good point.
Because the story is too big to fail. Yep. So, and we made a YouTube video. My family and I, we went to Yellowstone. Oh, that Old Faithful Lodge that's there. So fabulous. Mm-hmm. We love Yellowstone. And we get to the petrified tree, and my son takes out a cell phone video camera and says, all right, Dad, go ahead. I'm recording. And I just impromptu told the story of that tree that did not grow there.
Yeah. And you posted it on YouTube. It's really well done.
Well, thank you,
Fred. For being impromptu like that.
Yeah, impromptu and out of breath after hiking through Yellowstone. But it's got a couple thousand views, and we'll embed that also right here on our website, rsr.org/polystraits.
So Wikipedia has an article on polystrait fossils, but they're really just an article about trees.
About the trees, exactly. So, Fred, in that article, they reference a number of scientific journal papers, and I think it's the lead paper that they mention published in the Journal of the Geological Society. The lead author, William DeMichel, I sent him a message and asked him if he'd be willing to share that paper for us at Real Science Radio. And he was very gracious, as I find these authors of these papers often are. You know, you could buy them for $35 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But RSR, we operate on a shoestring budget here. Yep. And he was very gracious. He just sent us five papers published in different journals on these upright tree forests. And so it's sort of like the impeachment 27,000 page document dump.
We'll have our staff go through it.
Yes, our staff are looking at these papers right now. But I am so thankful that he sent these. And so we will go through and see what we've noticed so far is that their explanation of upright trees often misses the point that these are secondary locations for those trees. They were transported and often misses the point that most polystrait fossils are not trees. They're other kinds of fossils. And Fred, maybe the last thing about polystrait trees, we've got a diagram that's in a book on geology from 1891. It's called The Elements of Geology by Herman Credner, and on page 479, he writes about the upright trunks in carbon sandstone in Saint-Étienne, France. And what a picture, Fred. And it's just exactly like we're describing what happened in Yellowstone, exactly to a T.
Yeah. And this is somewhat famous picture that creationists have referred to this for quite a long time, but it's on the webpage, rsr.org/polystrait.
And we point out that these trees did not grow here. They did not grow here.
Nope. Then there is the polystrait radiating spines.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really cool picture on the website, too. You got to go there and see this.
Just to see the radiating spines.
It's hard to explain it on the air.
Yeah. Picture an organism with dozens of, they look like they're paper thin spines coming out from their center point, like spokes on a wheel. And these very fine radiating spines are passing through some of the gnarliest looking rock structures you've ever seen.
Yep.
So normally, if a geologist, if you show them a picture of these rock layers, say like 3 feet over, just take a picture, leave out the spines, and you ask how long, you tell them what kind of rock it is and all, how long would you say these half a dozen layers you can see in this photo right here, how long would you say it took for those to be deposited?
Well, at this rate, Bob, I'm looking at this picture and I see these different layers, and I'm going to say that'd be at least 100,000 years, maybe 300.
Yeah.
Maybe 250,000 years, Bob.
Yeah, right. Something, you know, certainly centuries or thousands of years, yeah, or 100,000 years, something, because it always is. It always is.
Yeah. And then you show them the close-up picture, and you see these spines of this creature.
And what they do.
Going through different strata.
And you realize how delicate they are. They can't be sitting, you know, 6 inches above the strata with the spines going up and down and sideways like a spoke wheel, sitting there for even months or years or decades while the sediments are forming.
Well, the spines do help it get caught in the sediment,
oh, it
you
would
know,
help
and
it
then,
get
you
caught,
know,
that's for sure.
Yeah, and then, you know, then you go thousands of years without it decomposing, so right, the rest of it can get buried. And by the way, they're and still sticking up and not drooping,
yeah,
or anything.
Yeah, right, right. And the spines going up are not any more eroded than the spines going down,
yeah,
which they would have had to be exposed for decades,
yep,
or centuries,
but they're the
longer.
Same, it's the same non-erosion.
Yeah, so what this does, these fossils right here, there are multiple ones of these, they collapse the possible deposition time of these layers of rock from hundreds or thousands of years down to minutes,
mm-hmm,
or hours,
yep,
maybe minutes or seconds.
Yeah.
So the layers and the organism fossilized, permineralized in it, that entire surrounding matrix, that tells a story. And how far do those strata go? Geologists lack curiosity.
Yeah, and that's an important point that you brought up last show, is these strata go for miles, right?
Oftentimes.
Yeah.
Not
and
all,
so
but
that,
many
The
times.
Fact that it has a polystrate fossil in it, it already invalidates that layer as something that was laid down
for
over thousands of years.
Entire
it had to, that
geographic
whole,
region.
That whole layer has to have been done rapidly.
Right.
And then, as you mentioned last show, it's so interesting that then that layer is intertwined, like taking,
yeah,
your fingers and putting them together,
yeah,
with another layer.
Right.
And so
those
that other
layers,
layer has to also have been done rapidly.
Yes. So, Fred, wherever around the world you find polystrate fossils, they should all be marked in a database so that,
yeah,
serious geologists, ones who want to actually know about the formation rates of these strata, serious geologists could look and see the extent and the range of the influence of the voice of these rocks. When Jesus said, even the rocks themselves would,
oh, interesting,
shout out,
yeah,
that's what's happening. The rocks themselves are telling the story of the history of the earth.
Yeah. Now, I thought you came up with a great idea, and you posted it on National Geographic's website, right?
Oh, yeah. They had a contest.
Yeah.
An explorers contest. And you submitted your ideas, and I submitted something called GEE, Geo Earth Explorer. And it's a tool to explore what's under the surface of the Earth. And so National Geographic, they had to approve or not your entry into their contest. And I was thankful they approved, mm-hmm, G. And they've got a little video of me there, 3 minutes long, up in the mountains, hiking. I just set my phone on a rock and just went to town.
And you
describing
look like a
it.
Professor in that video.
Yeah, yeah, and a geology professor, no,
yeah,
less, with rocks in my head.
Yeah.
So not only does that proposal still appear to this day, you could find it on our rsr.org/polystrates page, of course, but the CRS Quarterly also published this, and we link to that also. So the proposal is that we use Google Earth, and I say we, some creation ministry or activist could take on this project to use Google Earth to create a tour, just like they let you do above the surface of the Earth or below the ocean or even way out on the moon, create a tour of what's under the surface of the Earth, the strata.
Yeah, that would be so cool because then, you know, you get all these examples all over the globe of the polystrate fossils.
So the first thing you need is the strata themselves.
Yep.
And that's being produced in Dallas by ICR's Dr. Tim Clary.
So what's that again? Dr. Clary's producing
this database, a global database, all the continents on Earth of the strata that's below the surface.
So to take that a step further, you're proposing that it also, there's a tool that includes the fossils.
Yeah, so you could also mark where fossils are. And you could mark where polystrate fossils are. And it would be like a crowdsourced effort, like Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah.
And if somebody goes on to vandalize it, then, you know, you boot them out and you mark their IP address. But in doing this, then millions more people could get an intuitive sense of what's under the ground and how it is that the old Earth uniformitarian story fails in a thousand ways.
In a thousand ways, and how the global flood story passes the test in thousands of ways.
Because
you'd really get a great picture of around the globe of what the global flood did.
Yes.
But I think the most important thing, Bob, is if you link to that video to National Geographic, people can go there and watch Bob Inyart's worst hair day ever.
Hey, I was imitating a geology professor.
Yeah, it really worked out good.
Hey, and the editors at National Geographic, they bought it.
Yeah.
So we only have a couple left, Fred. There's the polystrate fossil of a mesosaur, and this is another from that great creation guy, John McKay, this photo. This is an extinct reptile, aquatic reptile. It's not a mosasaur. It's a mesosaur. And you see the whole fossil here. And it's buried in multiple varve layers. Varves, they call them, which are supposed to be annual depositions. Very fine-grained. And what I like about the photo that John took, and we did the same thing with our trilobite fossil that was donated from a listener in Thailand to us here at RSR. We took a cross-section view, a side view of the rock that it's in, and you see there are maybe a dozen or more layers per inch. And so this mesosaur is buried, entombed in this stone, which is made up of all these microstrata. So that mesosaur, what was it doing? Sitting there for, say, 15 years? While the layers around it are being ever so gently and slowly.
And you would think you'd see some different kinds of erosion. I mean, this is a very detailed fossil, articulate, right?
Oh, yeah. It's not a bone here, a bone there. The whole skeleton is, it's an articulated fossil of this reptile. And wow, Fred, you can tell the upper parts of this fossil they don't have 10 years of erosion that the lower parts lacked.
Yep.
It was all buried at the same time, which falsifies that all those microstratum were laid down one year after another. There's also a photo right there of a belemnite, and that's a squid-like creature, but it's a vertebrate squid-like creature, and it's a polystrate buried in limestone, which supposedly
takes forever, very slow.
1,000 years, thousands of years per inch. Fred, I have noticed that geologists, when they talk about, this layer, you know, it was deposited over 1 million years, 40 million years, whatever, they don't like to say the deposition rates of these minerals, of the rock
and
layers.
And that's such a great point. So they don't like to say, these layers happen.
Say 8 years or 80 years per millimeter. They don't want to say that.
Or even
at
whatever rate per inch.
1,000 years per inch.
Yeah.
In the Grand Canyon, the Redwall Limestone, if you do the math, it's 4,000 years per inch for the time it would take that 400-foot layer to form during the eons they say it took to form. They don't like to put actual numbers to it because I think when they do, it's immediately obvious that you couldn't bury any fossils at those rates. No fossils. And the fact that these sedimentary rocks around the world are loaded with fossils, they're fossil bearing, falsifies their slow deposition rate
so it's,
story.
Yeah, it's kind of like another illusion that they use by not doing that. Yeah. They're appealing to like millions. They love the word millions.
So we, right.
Because it's so abstract. Millions,
right, everything. So we had to do the work like at the Grand Canyon. And it turns out that if the red wall limestone took as long as they claim to form, then that's 4,000 years per inch. Okay, say we don't know math. We're bad at it. It's really 1,000 years per inch. Still, it doesn't matter. It makes the case that you can't bury fossils at those rates. And, you know, they don't like to do the arithmetic. It's like Democrats in Iowa with their caucus results. You know, that was a catastrophe.
It sure was.
What an implosion.
And I think you could have helped out with an app for them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. My son and I, he's a financial wizard, Michael. We said we could have created an app for them. We could have designed the app, created it, launched it, so implemented it, and had the precinct captains use it and tally the results all within 1 hour.
1 hour.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Here's what we would have done. Google Docs, multi-user spreadsheet, 1,681 rows or whatever it is for each row for a precinct number. And the columns are the candidates, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, and so on. And they're for the first vote and then the candidates on the second vote. And that's it. Each precinct captain, everybody logs in, they put their numbers in, and the state Democratic Party, they tally it. It tallies itself.
Yeah.
It's done as long as it takes each group to put in their numbers. They're done in like 10 minutes.
Yeah. And so, you know, you would have probably sold this app at a reasonable price. And our producer said you could do a BOGO. Buy one, get one free.
Oh, yeah. We could have charged them, I think, under $5 million.
Yeah.
For that.
For a discount. Yeah.
BOGA. Okay, Nevada. We could sell it to them for use in Iowa and Nevada.
Yeah, there you go.
For $5 million. Yep. Hey, that would fund RSR broadcasts for the next 3 months. That'd be awesome. So, and these people want to take over healthcare.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just too much. Fred, we've been talking about the red wall limestone in the Grand Canyon area.
The 4,000 years an inch one.
Yes, that one, which is loaded with nautiloid fossils.
It is, including ones that are standing on their head.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine standing on your head for, you know, thousands of years?
While the limestone is building up around you.
You know, I broke my arm in junior high school because I was standing on my head.
Yeah.
And the guy next to me in his headstand couldn't stay up as long as I could. And he fell on my arm.
Broke my arm. I'm sorry to hear that. Now, if you happen to be in a limestone deposit and you just stayed there for a few thousand years,
that would have been better if the guy next to me was in a limestone deposit because he wouldn't have fell because he'd been stuck.
That's true. He would have been stuck. So a nautiloid is an extinct marine invertebrate, and it looks like an ice cream cone with a squid on the top of it.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Right?
Yeah, it really does.
Maybe a little Hershey's chocolate syrup on top of the squid. So when these things are being fossilized, the larger ones are about the length of your forearm. How do they lay there, the ones that are horizontal, for 10,000 years? Okay, give them 3,000 years. Okay, give them 1,000 years. Pretend it was a time of hyperfast limestone formation. So it only took 1,000 years to cover up a nautiloid fossil that's laying horizontally. It's absurd. Animals do not lay around, not even for decades, without being scavenged or decomposing.
And it's not like they found just a handful of nautiloids either.
No, not only are there thousands, there are millions of them, because they find one, on average, every 4 square meters, one nautiloid fossil. And 15% of those are standing vertically
on their heads,
up and down on their squishy squid heads with their points sticking up in the air. And so then you've got some of them that are 15 inches, 18 inches long. And if it was 1,000 years per inch, you know, it's really 4,000. We're talking about 60,000 years.
Yeah.
Forget about the time since Jesus was on earth. We're talking 60,000 years they would have had to be standing there covered by limestone. Or the geologists have to make a secondary assumption and say, well, wherever you find limestone, even though it looks amazingly like all the other limestone, here it deposited within minutes or hours.
Yep.
Or days. I mean, how long is it going to stand on its head? Let's say
the
minutes.
Rocks cry out, don't they?
Yeah, they cry out.
Just like the heavens declare the glory of God.
Yeah, and the rocks. Jesus said, if you stop these from praising me, the rocks and stones themselves will start to sing. And it's true. He made Adam and Eve out of the dust of the ground. Yep. So we have this also. We say, remember the Nautiloids when we had Dr. Stephen Meyer of the Discovery Institute on this program, a couple shows about his book, Darwin's Doubt, and the critics' arguments against Darwin's Doubt. I had the honor of reading the book, one of the early copies of the book, and doing a detailed interview with Stephen Meyer on this. And at the end of it, Fred, I said to Steve, and I had been on a cruise with him to Alaska, a science cruise, really great time. I said, Steve, remember the Nautiloids at the end of the interview. And he knew why I was saying that. He's an old earther. Most intelligent design advocates are old earthers.
Yeah.
I said, Steve, remember the Nautiloids. Would you do that for me? Remember the Nautiloids? He's like, all right, Bob. Every time I see him, I say, Steve, remember the Nautiloids. In fact, I think there's even a rememberthenautiloids.com.
Yeah, there might even be a motion picture. Remember the Nautiloids.
Yeah, there should be, right? You got the Darwinists standing on their heads just like the Nautiloids.
Well, Bob, I think this just might have been the best show ever on polystrate fossils. Whoa. And the different kinds.
That's what we propose, that we better do it or we're going to resign.
Yeah, that's right. But I think we succeeded, so we'll probably be back next week.
Okay, and so if we judge ourselves whether we did it or not, I'd say we're in good shape.
Yeah. So rumor has it there might be a Ryan Williams next week.
Ryan Williams.
My son.
A younger version of Fred. Brilliant
guy.
He's going
to take over my chair for next Wednesday.
And he'll be here in studio. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Be a lot of fun.
Talk about his experience at CSU at Colorado State with, you know,
As a creationist, getting an engineering degree.
Yeah. And just, it's interesting the stories he has on his interactions on creation versus evolution.
Yeah.
And climate change and all that silly stuff that they teach, that they promote and push up there.
That'll be so much fun.
You know, all the high school kids that then go to college that never hear our side of things. And he was amazed how many of them, you don't believe in evolution? They were shocked and surprised.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And then when you start to have the conversation, that's what I'm going to ask him, Fred. I'm going to ask Ryan, what kinds of evidence or arguments did you present to your fellow classmates when the topic came up?
Yeah. That'll be interesting. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thanks,
Bob. Bob Enyar for Real Science Radio. Remember, February 18th, Patterns of Evidence, The Miracle of the Red Sea Crossing.
And remember the Nautiloids.
Remember the Nautiloids. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.